The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, once again, we want to say good morning again, Trinidad and Tobago. Welcome back to The Human Impact as we now turn over to the good Dr. Fidel Rampersad as he takes you into the conversation on cancer. All right, World Health Cancer Day was celebrated on Tuesday, 4th of... what date was again? 4th of February? No, right, 4th of February. That was just last Tuesday. Today's actually the 6th. Yeah. Yeah. That was this Tuesday gone. Well, that's last Tuesday. This Tuesday, same Tuesday gone. Some people there, boy. All right, Dr. Rampersad, it's over to you.
Hi, morning. Thanks for having us here to talk about cancer this morning. As we know, more and more families and individuals are being affected by this dreaded disease that's becoming more and more prevalent. So, you know, the point of having a World Cancer Day and having events around it is so that we could spread awareness about this condition amongst the general population and sort of remove the stigma and the secrecy around the diagnosis and treatment, and to let everybody know that more and more we're making strides into better screening or early detection of cancer and better outcomes and better treatment modalities that might be made available, and at the end of the day to impact lives in a better way. So what we have is a situation now where all of the major cancers are being dealt with individually and as a group so that we can make a better impact upon the outcomes of cancer deaths or cancer mortality. So what we have is a national system where the incidence and prevalence of different types of cancer are monitored, and the resources are aligned by the powers that be to address these common cancer conditions. So first of all, like, what is cancer? You know, a lot of people might have idea of what is cancer, know that is, you know, something that is the dreaded C word, or something that, you know, you don't want to hear that you have this diagnosis. But what is really cancer? Cancer is a condition where we have cells in the body. Cells are little elements that make up the entire body, and these cells live and die, and the body takes care of them normally. Some cells live forever, some undergo regeneration, some cannot regenerate, right? Cancer cells have lost their ability to have this normal control, and they just divide and replicate uncontrollably. So usually this is due to a mutation in the cell that prevents it from having a fixed lifespan. And these cells continue to generate and grow and grow and grow. And sometimes they grow and slowly, sometimes they grow quickly, and sometimes they grow and remain confined to the organ. So let's say, for example, a cell within the breast might grow and grow very slowly, or sometimes it can grow rapidly and just grow outside of the breast, involve the skin, or spread to other parts of the body. So that's called metastases. So when cancer is early on, obviously it will be small. It might not be detectable by feeling. It might just be detectable on something like an X-ray or a mammogram or an ultrasound. And at that point, if it's treated, we can actually have a better outcome than if we wait for it to grow and get bigger and spread outside of the organ. Well, then that makes it even more challenging to treat. But now that it's incurable, it can very well be treated with the new modern technologies and medications that I alluded to earlier. So it's important to know what cancer is. Basically, rapidly dividing cells that has lost its ability to self-regulate. The body can no longer control it, and it starts to grow into a mass or lump or tumor. These are different ways that we say the same thing. So it's also important to know that every day cells in the body undergo this transformation. So there are cells in the body that continuously forming cancer, but the body has a way of taking care of them. There are little policemen that go around and monitoring all of these cells in the body, and they just take care of those cells before they become a problem. That is just the nature of cell division, that you might have some things going badly, but the body takes care of it. So what is it that we could do as individuals to help our body take care of these cancer cells and help them from preventing and help ourselves from developing the cancer? Well, first of all, there's some instances where we could do everything right. Everything right, we're doing everything right, but we still end up, you know, I might see the patient, and I've had one or two patients who say, but doc, I do everything right, how come I end up with cancer, right? A lot of time, it's just a genetic predisposition. So a fair percentage of cases, some would say about 30%, might have a genetic predisposition. You know, you come from a family where cancer is high, or you might have a gene mutation that might predispose you to cancer. And that might be one of the causes. Really, there's nothing really you could do to minimize the risk of developing cancer, except that you could undergo screening so that you could detect these cancers before they become a problem, right? So let's say, for example, you have a gene mutation or genetic predisposition to developing breast cancer. You know, you can't really do anything to prevent it. You can do stuff to minimize the chance of getting it, but there's an inherent risk that you may develop it. So what you do, you screen better, you pay better attention to your breasts. My feeling, you do better screening tests like mammogram or ultrasound or MRI. The minute you detect something, you decide to do a biopsy of it or deal with it right away, check your doctor to see and make sure. So that is one way to deal with it if you have a genetic predisposition. So starting off, there's some people who have an increased risk of cancer because of genetic predisposition. But there's a big subset, some say up to 50%, 30 to 50% of patients that develop cancer because of lifestyle issues. So what are these lifestyle issues? In other words, what lifestyle issues might predispose someone to developing cancer? And on the other side of that coin, what lifestyle modifications you can do to reduce the risk of cancer? There are quite a few of them. Well, a major one is smoking. So as we all know, smoking predisposes to lung cancer, but smoking actually predisposes to most cancers. So simply by consuming cigarettes is a major thing that we can do. Stop being exposed to secondhand smoke. So if your spouse or partner smokes, you know, you can ask them to not smoke around you. And you could also encourage them to stop smoking. So that's one thing. The other thing is obesity. So what we find is that many cancers are increased in patients who are overweight. So if you measure height and weight and calculate something called the body mass index, you can get an idea of if you're overweight or obese, and that needs to be tackled because that is a risk factor for cancer. Your diet, so eating a lot of processed foods and not eating enough colorful fruits and vegetables, not eating salad, not eating fruits, all of these things predispose to cancer. So if your diet consists of fast food, fried chicken, chips, etc., pizza, and not including fruits and vegetables, salads, and having a diverse source of different types of non-processed foods, so clean foods, then that is a risk factor as well. Lack of exercise. So when you live a sedentary lifestyle, all you're doing is going to work. You're not making time to go run, to walk, to go to the gym, to dance, bicycle, etc. You're not making time for any of that. That is in itself a risk factor. People who go out into the sun a lot, especially this is more for Caucasian people because their incidence of skin cancer is very, very high in those countries. If you go out into the sun and you don't wear sunblock or protective clothing, that also predisposes to cancer. We are around a season where alcohol consumption is increased. Alcohol consumption is a risk factor for cancer, right? So, you know, you always used to hear, oh, well, one glass of wine is protective to your heart and all of that. All alcohol consumption predisposes to cancer, right? If you think about it, remember we talked about a little policeman in the body that goes around and mops up the cancer cells. When you're consuming alcohol, which is a toxin to the liver, it damages or impairs the body's ability to repair cancer cells and eliminate cancer cells. So all alcohol consumption, whether it's one drink or 10 drinks, right? Obviously, the more you drink increases your risk, is a risk factor for cancer. So right away, there's just a few simple lifestyle modification tips that we can use to reduce our risk of developing cancer by as much as 50%. And I'll just repeat it. Avoiding too much processed foods and eating lots of fruits and vegetables and salads. Avoid being overweight or obese, have a healthy weight. exercise, whether it's simple walking, running, gym, etc., dancing, whatever. Exercise is an important factor that we can make, that we can add to our lives to prevent cancer. Smoking, stop smoking. Stop drinking alcohol, minimize the alcohol content. Don't go drinking every weekend or drinking every day of the week, etc. Right? That is a factor that we can employ to reduce cancer, right? And those simple things, lifestyle modifications that we can employ, and would reduce our risk of cancer by as much as 50%. Another cause for cancer is certain infections and viruses, right? So I'm not sure if you all might be aware, but there's actually a vaccine for cervical cancer, right? So what they find is a particular virus that predisposes some people to developing cancer of the cervix. So cancer of the mouth of the womb is a very common cancer in our setting. And they found that people who got this vaccine has less chance of having that infection and therefore less chance of developing cancer. So there's certain infections that might predispose to cancer, like, for example, the HPV. That virus infection of the mouth, it also produces cancers to the back of the throat as well. Cervix, there's some cancers of viruses of the liver, like hepatitis, that might predispose to cancer. So what I just tried to do there is sort of tell you some of the things that might predispose to cancer. There's, and things that you can do to reduce your risk. So for example, if you have one of these infections, you can have it addressed and treated accordingly, and that may in turn help prevent your risk of cancer. Or if the infection cannot be treated or eliminated, at least pay closer attention to that organ by your doctor so that they can intervene as soon as needed. So if you have any lifestyle modifications, we are aware of our genetic predispositions and we are aware of any infections that we have, well, then we can minimize the risk or chance of us getting cancer. Having said that, we could do all of those things and still get cancer, but the rate will be much less. There's certain workers like my field, I'm a radiologist and I'm exposed to x-rays and things like that when we do procedures and like things in the cath lab, like angioplasty and stenting and all of that. I might get exposed to radiation and that might predispose me to developing cancer. So I have to take steps to know that. I have to monitor. We wear devices to monitor how much radiation we get. We wear protective clothing with lead in it to avoid the x-rays from penetrating our body, right? We try to minimize how much radiation we expose to. So all those things we can do to prevent our own personal risk. But having said that, we can do the things to prevent our risk, but we also have to somehow be mindful that we could do those things and still get it. So we have to, that's where screening comes in. So what is screening? You know, we often hear the time screening for cancer. We're not really sure what screening for cancer means. Screening for cancer basically means we're trying to detect the presence of cancer at an early stage so that when we treat it, we can have a cure or a very good outcome. It makes no sense screening for cancer if we can't treat the cancer when we find it. And it makes no sense screening for cancer if we treat the cancer, but it's of no better outcome than if we had just waited for it to become present. So for example, let's look at a successful screening program, which is cervical cancer. It said the cervix is something that the mouth of the womb that female gets, right? And it's very, very common in developing countries, but not so common in the developed countries. And the reason why is because of screening. So what they do is something called a pap smear, where a little device is inserted into the vagina. The doctor, the nurse looks at the cervix, see if it's healthy and takes some cells out of there. That's called a pap smear, sends it to the lab. And they will either say this is normal or abnormal. And if it's abnormal, then we have to do other tests like biopsies or sometimes even surgeries. And what that does, it picks up the cancer at an early stage or even at a precancerous stage. And then targeted therapies are directed, whether it be surgery or cone biopsy or whatever it is, to get rid of those cells, send it for more testing and then treat accordingly. So if that is done, all the cervical cancers will get picked up early and therefore the women have better outcome. I have seen lots of patients with cervical cancer in our setting where the cancer spread and went to involve the bladder and the ureters, and the patient would block kidneys and renal failure, etc. And so it's really horrible to think that you could develop these cancers, but it can so easily be prevented. Just same way breast. Breast cancer screening involves use of a mammogram and sometimes an ultrasound. A mammogram is a type of x-ray and ultrasound uses sound waves to pick up abnormalities in the breast. You can't just wait for you to feel something, because by the time you feel something, it might be about 2 centimeters. But if you do a mammogram on ultrasound, you could pick it up at about 0.5 to 1 centimeter. In other words, you pick it up smaller. When you pick up something smaller, as I said earlier, there's a less likelihood that it has spread, and therefore you have a better. So screening is something that is very important. And what are the common cancers we can screen for? Well, I mentioned cervical cancer we can screen for with a pap smear. Breast cancer we can screen for with mammogram and ultrasound. We can screen for colon cancer, which is a cancer of the bowel. It's very, very common, especially now developing in younger people, because of some people speculate because of toxins in the environment and foods that we eat, these highly processed foods that we talk about, the plastics, etc. In the food, we have to screen for colon cancer. So when you reach 40 to 50, you have a colonoscopy or a CT colonoscopy, or there's a test where you can test for these cancer byproducts in the stool. It's called a FIT test. And that will pick up an abnormality in the colon, and you might be able to pick up a polyp before it has become cancerous. So you pick up a cancer before it has spread. So and then you have the targeted therapy, whether it be just removing the polyp or whether it be surgery to remove the area. And therefore, you're cured of cancer because it hasn't spread anywhere. You know, so that's what we do for colon. For prostate, which is a very common cancer in males, you do something called PSA screening. It's a blood test, and it's fairly accurate to be able to pick up a patient who might be at risk of having cancer. And then if it's the PSA is elevated or the finger test is abnormal, where the doctor feels the prostate, then you can do something like an MRI or biopsy to see exactly what's going on and give you a tissue diagnosis. For lung cancer is another common one. There are two tests that I use. A chest x-ray can pick up a lung mass, but a type of scan called a low-dose CT scan is another way to screen for lung cancer, where nodules are picked up. And it's especially useful in patients who are at risk, namely patients who are smokers, who were working in industry and exposed to asbestos, etc. So those are some of the common cancers that we have, that we screen for, and that we could pick up early and lead to better outcomes. You know, an interesting story, the gastric cancer of the stomach, is very common in certain Asian countries, for example, Japan. We get gastric cancer here, cancer of the stomach here, but it's unusual. It's an unusual cancer to get. So we wouldn't recommend screening for gastric cancer in our population because the incidence of gastric cancer is low. But in Japan, where the incidence of gastric cancer is high, then they have to screen for it because they found that when they pick up the gastric cancer with a scope, they're able to treat it sooner and they have better outcomes. So in other words, it's all dependent on where you are. So some of the cancers that I called out before are things that we commonly screen for. But if you have an increased risk of other certain types of cancers, then you might want to screen for those. For example, if you have a risk of thyroid cancer, like for example, you've got radiation to the neck, or you have a family history or genetic predisposition to thyroid cancer, well, then you might want to do a thyroid ultrasound and some blood tests to screen for that. Let's say you have a family history of pancreatic cancer, you might want to do a blood test or an ultrasound or CT of the pancreas to screen for that. But I wouldn't advocate that everybody screen for every type of cancer. One has to do a personalized visit with your doctor, and they will decide which cancer test you can screen, which cancer type you can screen for, right? Because you don't want to go devoting a lot of resources and spending a lot of money to do these tests, right? There are also blood tests called tumor markers that are elevated in certain types of cancers. So for example, ovarian cancer. In some places, they actually screen for ovarian cancer with an ultrasound and the blood test. And if it's abnormal, well, then you take it further with surgery, etc., depending on where it is, right? So there's certain genetic predispositions in some people that might be predisposed to ovarian and breast cancer. So those patients will have to do ovarian cancer screening, right? Not the general population. So it's for all types of cancers you can have screening, but we don't recommend screening for everyone for every type of cancer at this point. Things are evolving. As I said, there are blood tests called tumor markers that might be elevated in certain types of cancers, but there are also genetic tests that might reveal a risk. These are on the horizon and developing. You do a genetic test and it tells you like what might be a risk for different types of cancers, and then you deal with that risk accordingly. Now, the downside to all of these screening tests, while it might pick up cancers early and allow it to be treated. The downside is that it sometimes leads the patient along a path that is very distressing, and it ends up not being cancer, right? So for example, you did a mammogram for breast cancer screening and it showed up an abnormality. Then you do an ultrasound, it showed up the mass, then you do a biopsy, and then that comes back negative. Well, okay, we're happy it's not cancer, but it is a negative biopsy. In other words, if you had not screened, you would have not had that need to do that biopsy, you would have not had cancer, and you'd go on living like normal. Okay, so that's one of the downsides of screening. And we also have to be very aware that we might do screening tests and it might come back that we'll have to do another procedure. And that's the downside of screening, is that nothing is 100% perfect. It would be great if we had a test that only picks up cancer and doesn't pick up benign conditions, right? So every time you have a lump can be malignant or cancerous, or a lump can be benign, right? So that is where we are at with screening. Screening saves lives. Screening reduces the risk of dying from a particular type of cancer. There are a lot of studies that show that consistently. For example, for breast, they said screening for breast cancer reduces deaths from breast cancer by about 35%. Okay. So when we recognize things that we can do, to summarize what we said so far, things that we can do to reduce our own personal risk of cancer, and things that we can do to detect cancer. Now we have to just kind of touch on what are some of the things we can do to treat cancer once we detect it, right? So remember, the point of the World Cancer Day is to spread awareness, right? So what can we do to treat cancer? Well, first of all, it all depends on how far gone the cancer is. If it's confined, if it's spread to the lymph nodes, cancer spread to lymph nodes or glands next to the organ. So for example, if it's in the breast, it spreads to the armpit. If it's in the pelvis, like for example, in the prostate, it might spread to lymph nodes next to the prostate or along the spine, or prostate cancer might spread to the bone, etc. So then we have to be mindful of how we stage the condition. There are different ways to stage a disease, but usually it will involve an examination, some blood tests, and a radiological investigation, for example, like a CT scan or an MRI or a PET CT scan, and that will tell us exactly where it spread. Is it confined? Is it spread? And it will give you a stage. Did it just spread a little bit? Did it spread far? You know what I mean? Is it involving distal organs like the lung and bone, etc.? And that allows us to decide. The oncologist is a doctor who leads the cancer treatment, and he forms part of a team that might include the radiologist, the referring doctor, the surgeon or the gynecologist, the urologist, etc., the chest physician, a lot of different people, and they come together and they make a decision. So let's say some cancers might need some surgery to get rid of the cancer. Some cancers might need surgery and a little bit of chemotherapy after. Some patients might need chemotherapy before to shrink the tumor before they operate. Some patients might need surgery, chemotherapy, radiation treatment, other forms of treatment like immunotherapy, etc. Some patients can do things that might be amenable to things like radiofrequency ablation, where we put probes in and burn them out without having to do an operation. Some patients might not require any operation, but really just require chemotherapy or radiation. So there are different ways to treat cancer, and it all is individualized after discussion by a team and looking at some of the evidence from trials that are done abroad to give you the best outcome. There are some cancers that are very, very resistant to treatment, and that's why we have to monitor it. So you might have a CAT scan before, you'll have a CAT scan after. If there's no good response, then we have to add in other drugs, etc., add in other modalities like radiation, etc., to try to get a better response. Okay. And another part of the thing apart from treatment is the individualized care. You know, we have to remember it's not a condition we're treating as a patient we're treating. You have to let them know that they're not going through this alone, that they have support, that they have people they can count on, their support networks, their people they can talk to cope with to deal with the mental health issues. The family is going through a lot. They have to deal with stuff as well. Sometimes getting to the clinic every day for 3 weeks straight is challenging. That has to be supported, etc. So that's where everybody gets together, the state enterprises, the RHAs, the ministry, the NGOs, etc., get together and help these patients navigate the cancer process. Actually, there's a a team now that is in charge of navigating the process. The healthy patients are very overwhelming because you're faced with this diagnosis and possible, you're thinking about possible death, and now you have to deal with all of these issues, funding, getting to clinic, you know, uprooting your life, your family is getting, life is getting disrupted, you might be able to go to work again, funding for insurance, etc. There's a lot of things to deal with. So that's why it's not just about condition, treating the condition, you also have to treat the patient. Right, so I think I spoke enough about different facets of cancer, from risk factors and how we can adjust the risk factors, to screening to pick cancer up early so that we can have a better outcome, to some of the treatment that is available here, how we monitor the treatment, and how we try to treat the patient and not just the condition, and know that there is support and help if you do develop the condition or one of your family members. All right, so I don't know if I should hand over back to the host at this point, and I'm not sure if you have any questions.
Well, one of the questions I have, and of course I have the brand manager in the studio with me, we have some questions. You mentioned something about alcohol. How does alcohol, you know, that caught my attention, and another texter was like, how does alcohol affect persons with cancer, either to prevent it or persons that are currently diagnosed with it?
Right. So alcohol is by its nature, a toxin, right? So the actual alcohol is a toxin to the body, right? And we were talking about how every day cells within the body become cancerous. And these cells are dealt with by the body, right? So the body has these little policeman cells that go out and find these abnormal cells and destroy them, right? So when we're ingesting the alcohol toxin, right, it not only predisposes to mutations in these cells, predisposes them to becoming cancerous, it also damages the body's ability to repair these cancer cells. So that is how alcohol itself predisposes to cancer. And there is a lot of data about it. Even one drink can predispose to cancer. Now, life is not about just doing everything we can to stop cancer, right? Yeah, because at the end of the day, people will want to consume alcohol, and that is part of life. But just know that it is a risk factor, and it's scientifically proven as a risk factor. If you want to eliminate that risk factor, obviously you have to eliminate alcohol. But you can also live your life to minimize the risk factors, maybe not drink as much. So when you go out, instead of having four drinks in a row, maybe just have one and have three non-alcoholic drinks in between. So you just have to be mindful. It doesn't make sense to have information and not act on it. But at least if you're not willing to totally stop the alcohol consumption, and I know it's difficult, right? We all human. Then be aware that, you know, maybe you could not drink as much, maybe not drink as often, because if you want to minimize the cancer risk, you know, it is a risk factor.
The thing about it is, you know, we all born with cancer cells, and with that being said, now, you know, it's a whole situation of what do we do, how do we prevent it. And from my studies and research on the matter and discussing stuff, I come to realize that there's no surefire way. I know some people, my aunt passed away from cancer many, many years ago, and she was a relatively young woman, probably now turning 20, 21, and live a very Christian church, you know, that kind of lifestyle, not partaking with illicit drugs or alcohol or anything of that nature, and still contracted this dreaded disease and passed away eventually of it, no matter what they did, the radiation. And from what we know, she lived a very, you know, what we'll say a clean lifestyle per se. Very moderate with her meat intake and all these different things, but still died at a very young age. So it tells me that the avoidance of certain things, while it's necessary, it still does not guarantee you that you would not at some point in your life contact this dreaded disease. No, not even smoke. So I wanted to ask you to help me to understand how a person like that still end up getting themselves diagnosed with this dreaded cancer.
Right, so only about 30 to 50% is attributable to lifestyle factors, right? So if you have 100% of cancer cases and you look at them, only about 30 to 50% of them could have actually been prevented by doing the lifestyle factors that we're alluding to, right? By addressing the lifestyle factors. So if we exercise regularly, if we have a healthy weight and avoid being obese, if we avoid alcohol, if we avoid cigarette smoke, if we eat a healthy diet with lots of fruits and vegetables, we can reduce our own personal risk by about 30 to 50%. And it eliminates the risk. You could only reduce the risk, right? And there are other things that just cannot be prevented. We might have a genetic predisposition. There might be factors in the environment that we're exposed to, like I alluded to, certain work, people who work in radiation. Sunlight, you know, you can't avoid sunlight. There's natural radiation coming. The earth emits radiation that we're exposed to. If we take a flight from here to Miami, we get exposed to radiation that is equivalent to hundreds of x-rays, right? Because we're traveling high up in the air. We don't have that the ionizing radiation from the sun being absorbed by the atmosphere. So there's inherent cancer risk for all of us, right? But what we can't change that. But what we can change is the ones that we could mitigate, which is the ones like the lifestyle factors. And the other thing I alluded to is that even if you do those things, you still have your risk of developing cancer. But what you should do is be screening for cancer so that if, for example, your aunt did all the correct things, but inherently she still had that risk of developing cancer. If, I don't know what type of cancer she had, but it's not relevant, right? But if she had was able to screen for the cancer, for example, if she was able to do breast cancer screening, she would have picked up the cancer earlier. So yes, you can do all the things that you can do to reduce your risk, but you can't just say that alone. Now you have to try to detect it early so that if you do, despite doing all those things, if you develop it, well then let's try to pick it up early so we could deal with it. Let's do the colonoscopy, let's do the mammogram, let's do your pap smear, let's do some blood tests, you know, let's check for your tumor markers, right? So these are things that you can do. Now, what the other approach is to just say, well, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to deal with it.
If it comes. Happens. Well, hold on a minute.
Right? So some people.
Yeah. Well, 1 minute. Yeah. Hello, good afternoon. Yeah. Good morning, sorry. Hello? Do you have a question? All right. You have about a minute. If you want to get a question in 625-2257 or 627-3223, or WhatsApp me at 306-1065. But, you know, I'm happy that we were able to have this conversation because I was listening to you while you were carrying on with your discourse there, and I just wanted to find out. But prevention is better than cure. And I think the bottom consensus here is to get yourself checked out. Be in a position of knowing what is happening, because early detection can very well save your life. Now, final thought for this morning. What about chemotherapy? Persons say, well, boy, my aunt had, my mother did this, and she take chemo, she died. She didn't last long. And the next person say, well, I didn't really do chemotherapy. I drink some herbs, and, you know, this person lasts longer. Chemotherapy kills both good and bad cells, but how effective is it?
Yeah, so different is at the front line of research, right? What cancer cells are is rapidly dividing cells. And what chemotherapy does is try to prevent those cells from dividing or trying to kill those cells, right? So any cells that are dividing in the body will be susceptible to chemotherapeutic agents. So that's why your hair drops out. That's why you might get burning in the stomach, because it also harms normal cells, right? But as technology is increasing, more and more trials are conducted, you have chemotherapy agents that are more targeted and cause less side effects, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, I do procedures where you can actually just deliver the chemotherapy to the organ itself. So we get into the blood vessels and we give the chemotherapy to the liver for liver when the liver is involved with tumors, so that it avoids the chemotherapy agents going all over the body and affecting the brain, bowel, lung, et cetera, et cetera. So as trials go on, we have better and better drugs that are coming out and chemotherapeutic agents that cause less and less side effects. There's some, I have seen it, and it's well known. There's some, for example, types of chemotherapy that are given and tumors completely disappear, right? So that's why the tumor type, how aggressive the tumor is, certain receptors on the tumor have to be checked. There's some tumors that are very, very responsive to chemotherapy. There's some patients with lymphoma, you know, they have big lymph nodes all over the body. Mm-hmm. You give them chemotherapy and in a matter of 3 months when they come back for the other scan, all of them are gone. So there's no doubt that chemotherapy works, but the patient also has to be fit for chemotherapy. So a lot of times doctors will counsel patients and assess patients and give them a status as to say, well, look, we kind of missed the boat with this one. You're too far gone. You have a type of cancer that may not be amenable to chemotherapy. It's already spread to here and there. We want to give you the chemotherapy, but I'm looking at your heart. That's why they send you for all these tests. You know, they send you for an ultrasound of your heart. They send you for a chest x-ray, all kind of things to make sure that you're fit for the chemotherapy, because it does take a toll on the body. And they will say, well, here, what, you know, I don't think you're fit for this chemotherapy. I don't think we should go that route and let's look at another option. Okay, so not everybody responds the same way to chemotherapy because the tumors are different and also the individuals are different. Some individuals are fit, like young, fit, healthy people will respond better to stronger doses of chemotherapy than an older, more sick person. And if you get the stronger the dose of the chemotherapy agent to optimize it, you will get a better result. So it definitely works. You know, it's not this big, you know, a lot of people try to talk about this big conspiracy by the medical establishment to just make money and all of that. You know, chemotherapy agents do work, but it's just that they can have a lot of side effects, especially for patients who are not fit, right? So not everybody is for chemotherapy.
All right, doctor, I want to thank you very much for joining us on this segment. I got to take a break as we head up to the news. And I do wish you a safe and enjoyable balance of the day, whatever you're doing. And thank you so much for sharing these thoughts. We would most definitely be having you back on the program in the not too distant future. All right.
Thanks, have yourself a great one.
Same to you, buddy. All right.
The
bye-bye.
Best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.